A major power company was at the center of nasty ad campaigns last year as Florida lawmakers accused each other of letting Duke Energy stick it to customers. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Florida's legislative session begins March 3rd, and among the half-dozen proposed laws that deal with how Florida's utilities are run is one proposal that seeks to undo a law passed back in 2006 that allows Duke Energy, then Progress Energy, to charge customers up front for the cost of building nuclear plants with no guarantee they'll actually be built. We'll have more on that nuclear cost recovery clause in just a moment as we take a look at energy in Florida. Let's say hello to our guests. State Representative Amanda Murphy is a Democrat serving her second term from Newport Richey.
Yes.
Welcome.
Second full term.
And Ivan Penn covers utilities, energy, and consumer issues for the Tampa Bay Times. Welcome.
Good to be with you.
So, and by the way, there is an empty chair here. We invited a representative from Duke Energy to appear, but in an email to our producer, Lottie Watts, spokesman Sterling Ivey wrote that they were unable to participate in our upcoming panel discussion, later adding, quotes, "We are committed to providing state lawmakers with industry information as we work together to achieve energy policies that are fair and beneficial to all Floridians. Our 4,000 Florida employees will continue to work every day to ensure that we are providing reliable and safe electricity to our 1.7 million customers," end quote. So I just wanted to point out, by the way, that Duke and Progress before them have graciously appeared on the show before and that we always welcome their input and response. It just won't be here today during this show. So with that said, let's pull back from Duke for just a moment here. Ivan Penn, as I understand it, the average monthly electric bill nationwide is just over $107. In Florida, it's $123 a month. Honestly, I would give anything if my bill were that low, but why are the costs so high here in Florida?
Well, you have a, of course, that's the average cost for Florida. And you have a range. Duke Energy is on the higher end, particularly among the investor-owned utilities. And then you have Tampa Electric in the middle, again, on the investor-owned utilities, and Florida Power and Light, which is the largest among them at the lower end and below that 107. Mm-hmm. They're actually about $100, maybe a little less than $100.
Is it driven mainly by rates or fuel costs?
Well, you have a combination of both. Your base rate includes your power plants and all of the fixed costs involved in producing electricity, and then you also have your fuel rate, and you know it's a combination of fuel and if they purchase power because they needed to supplement a power plant, those things might go into that fuel rate. So you get a combination of those things that produce your total rate.
So Florida's rates are, we're not an outlier really with the United States. I mean, things do vary from region to region, but we're pretty much where you might expect our rates to be.
Well, and again, you know, you look at the average for the state, but then you have some things that are reflected in the, as with Duke, we have in a number of costs related to the nuclear issues.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those in just a moment. Amanda Murphy, would you agree, as many do, that Florida's energy portfolio is way out of whack and that we need to find a better balance between natural gas and nuclear energy?
Absolutely. I think that if we found that better balance, since we have a lot of natural gas in particular, that our citizens would come out better. And that's really what we need to look at from a state level is how can we best serve our Floridians and make sure that they have the electricity that they need, but also at a price that they can afford. Because remember, we have a large population of retirees. And if we want them to continue coming to Florida and being able to live here, this is one of the things that we have to look at.
There are, I counted about a half dozen bills before lawmakers dealing with utilities in Florida, mainly aimed at Duke Energy. This was certainly campaign fodder. Couldn't miss that last November for a number of candidates, charging customers in advance for nuclear power projects. And so this goes to Duke Energy.
Correct. That was that is the main company that we're looking at with this situation. And the reason that so many people started bringing it up on the campaign trail is if you go and knock the doors, and we've knocked myself personally probably around 5,000 doors, this is number one on the talking points at those doors is how much they're paying in electric.
Now, Ivan Penn, the utility companies say if you do not allow charging customers in advance for nuclear power projects, then all hope evaporates when it comes to nuclear energy in Florida, meaning we're pretty much stuck with natural gas and coal-fired plants.
And that's been basically the argument across the country. So back in the 80s, Wall Street essentially abandoned the idea of funding nuclear plants. So if you were going to pick up the upfront costs, the siting, the engineering, the all of those related to construction costs, somebody had to foot that bill, and Wall Street wasn't willing to do it. So what the utilities did was to propose shifting that burden and risk to the customers, and Florida became the pioneer in what was the nuclear renaissance in 2006, and decided to allow the utilities through what we now call the nuclear advance fee, but the technical term was the nuclear cost recovery clause.
Now, why would Duke want to do that? Why would they want to take on the risk? Would it really matter to them? If they're not going to build nuclear plants, they're okay just offering natural gas or coal fired. So, what choices do we have? Do we just let utilities keep charging customers for plants that might not get built, or do we just give up on nuclear power?
Well, you've got to look at a couple of different things, because Florida Power and Light has not given up on its proposed projects. Duke, in and of itself, has not necessarily given up on its nuclear plants. It has canceled the Levy project, but it continues to pursue licensing for new nuclear plants. They can acquire that license and sit on it for as long as 20 years. So they haven't necessarily completely abandoned the idea of nuclear, but without that upfront cost from customers, you don't really have the ability to finance it unless you start looking at your shareholders. And the question there is, if the utilities took the risk themselves and put that on their shareholders, how their shareholders would react to that.
Amanda Murphy, utilities sell power. That's what they do, and they do it for profit. If you shift the risk of future nuclear plants to them, wouldn't you agree that they're just not going to go there with it?
Not necessarily. Then it would have to be cost effective for their shareholders. It would be a business decision, and knowing that they are taking out the end user and they're having to put that on their business model, then they have to decide, is this something that we can afford for the long term? Instead, now they don't have to worry about the cost, because we, those of us that are Duke clients and customers, will pay for it no matter what happens.
Seemed like every lawmaker running for office last fall, we mentioned a moment ago, ran ads slamming Duke Energy over these fees. So a rollback of these fees, this advance fee, is very popular among folks. But would customers really benefit by that alone, Ivan Penn?
Well, right now, and for Duke customers, they're already paying a total of $3.2 billion for two nuclear projects that now will not produce a single kilowatt of electricity. You're already grappling with an enormous amount of costs in your electric bill for essentially very little. I mean, there are some costs in there of them purchasing alternative electricity, so they're getting something. But for the most part, right now, they're not getting very much. And so if you continue to pursue nuclear, what are the additional risks and the additional costs to customers? And Is the state willing to put that burden on the customers? Are the customers willing to keep on paying for something that may not materialize? Those are the challenges.
Can I give you an example of that? 2 years ago, we had a small school system run just the cost for the nuclear cost recovery portion. The savings to the school in a year would be around $256,000. That's for 1 year for one of our public school systems. That money could then go back into education, books, technology.
So you and Republican Chris Latvala are sponsoring a measure that would repeal that cost recovery fee and refund money that's been collected since when, 2006?
Yeah.
It's about 2009.
2009. Mm-hmm. Why not just add a provision that they must build a plant if they collect the fee instead of repealing the fee and refunding the money?
Because right now that is not in the projections. So let's give back the money. Go ahead and put a business plan together. Show us how it's going to happen. And then let's talk about where you're going to get the funding from.
Now, some lawmakers are proposing that the fee go away, but no refund. Now, if that's the sort of bill that emerges, would you support that?
Absolutely. We've had a bill for 3 years now to repeal this. So this year, currently, we do have multiple bills out, and we do have Republicans signing on to it. So I'm a little more excited that we might see some movement. My bill, simply, we wanted to go ahead and say, you know, this isn't right what's happened to the end user. If we can get them some of their money, the repeal would be only the money that has not been spent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's money that they have available that we should see back. But if we can't get that, a repeal would be a great success for us this year.
Now, you've heard from Duke Energy on this, right? Didn't they respond to you saying that, well, we're just going to review the details of your bill? Wasn't it something like that?
In the paper, they said that.
In the paper? Okay, so it wasn't directly to you. Well, I wonder, your measure is only a page long, right? So
I'm a very short, sweet, to the point person.
Have they had time to review it? Is what I'm wondering.
Well, and you know, on the actual construction, if you did pursue it, I mean, part of the problem here is, you know, Duke was looking at a plant that would cost $24.7 billion, and you look at their customer base, as they said from the memo that they sent to you. You know, you're talking about 1.7 million customers bearing the cost of $24.7 billion, and you're looking at an enormous amount of money to achieve that. And the longer it's delayed, the more that cost is going to rise.
So previous attempts at doing this have failed. Former Senator Mike Visano tried it. So who's running interference in Tallahassee, and why are they doing it? What's the biggest argument against rolling this feedback?
I have no idea. We can't even get the bill heard in a committee. We sign on to the bill and try and get it agendaed, and that's as far as we get. We cannot get it to the first committee.
Ivan Van, what are you picking up from Tallahassee on this?
Well, you know, again, you have another factor here, and that is that Florida Power and Light continues to use the nuclear advance fee. Because under the way the law has been crafted, it's not only a nuclear plant that qualifies for advance charges. Transmission lines that are tied to that nuclear project also are included. So what you can do if you're a utility is you can, if you're pursuing a nuclear plant, you can also use it, money from customers in advance to build transmission lines that are related to it. So for someone like Florida Power and Light, which has been building a number of transmission lines related to the proposed Turkey Point nuclear projects, you know, this remains a benefit to them, and they continue to pursue the license for those projects. So it's not just simply a question of a nuclear plant. There are things that are related to it as well.
But politically, is it sort of a nuclear versus natural gas sort of a thing going on in Tallahassee?
Well, from 2006, when they actually crafted this law, that was the whole impetus. The concern was the volatility of natural gas. The question that still needs to be further investigated is how often natural gas actually spiked. And if you look at the charts, there were a couple of spikes that lasted for a few months. But when you start looking at a nuclear plant and even the cost ahead of the now canceled Levy project, there were some numbers from Progress, now Duke, that showed customer bills rising by as much as $60 to $70 a month to help pay for this. And so when you're looking at all of these components, there's an enormous amount of headwinds to making this happen.
We're talking about energy in Florida. My guests are Newport Richey State Representative Amanda Murphy and Ivan Penn with the Tampa Bay Times. We would love to know what you think about all this. Weigh in on our Facebook page or send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. My guests are Newport Richey State Representative Amanda Murphy and Ivan Penn with the Tampa Bay Times, and we are talking about energy in Florida. So, Ivan Penn, every state has a set of regulators who make decisions involving rates and the like for their utilities. Is there anything unique about Florida and the system here that's harmful to consumers that may not exist elsewhere?
Well, as you're mentioning, there are different ways that different states handle it. We recently wrote about how the state of Georgia is in a position to beat out Florida on solar installment of solar power. The Georgia regulators there argue that part of the benefit that they have is that their regulators are elected. Our PSC commissioners are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. In the past, we did also elect our commissioners, but the legislature changed that, and so now they're appointed. The benefit that the Georgia regulators said of having been elected is that the community can hold that individual commissioner accountable by voting them out. Our Public Service Commission, they are basically under the legislature. And so who do you hold accountable if you don't like the decisions that the commission makes? It's difficult to hold the entire legislature accountable.
But if you elect your public service commissioners, you bring politics into it and political money. And then you have Duke Energy and the utilities sending some of that campaign cash their way. Do you face that danger of introducing politics into the process?
You do face that danger, but the money is already there. We have already opened Pandora's box. Currently, we do have a bill that would discuss limiting their terms, having them be elected, making sure that they are more accountable to the citizens, because that's what happens. He's right. There's 160 of us up there. You can't say which one of us are working for or against the PSC or the citizens. So if the PSC is elected directly from the citizenship, I think that everyone would start paying closer attention, at least in our area, because this is, as I said, one of the number one issues when you talk to people on the street. They are concerned about their electric bill, and they are all talking. I was at a meeting last night, and they are talking about what the PSC is and how they get their position.
Mm-hmm. And another component here is that the consumer advocate, the public counsel's office itself, is also under the legislature. So you have both the sort of judiciary panel in the role that the Public Service Commission plays. And the People's Council, both are under the legislature. So, and they're playing different roles, but responding to the same authority.
All right. Somebody mentioned the S word a moment ago, solar. And Amanda Murphy, I want to talk to you about this. Pinellas County Republican Senator Jeff Brandis has filed a bill that would reduce the taxes on solar power systems for businesses that install them. There's also been a call for allowing customers who generate their own power to be allowed to sell their excess back to their utility.
What a novel concept. I know when he said the S word, I was like, oh, solar, what's that? We don't have any sun in Florida. This is the number one thing that we should be looking at. Why are we not embracing this technology? It's cheap, it's clean, and For the end user that produces more, they can actually sell back. I have had a couple people come to my office and put together proposals that they want me to take to the governor because this is such an important step, and we really should be focusing on this.
But wait, have you seen the price of solar panels these days? It's still rather – I know the price is coming down, but it's still pretty unaffordable.
Well, one of the reasons why Georgia was arguing that they were passing Florida was because they were able to get the solar at what is 6 cents a kilowatt, which, by comparison, in the early figures that you mentioned, essentially we're looking at 12.3, 12.5 cents on the retail rate for electricity. So if they're getting it on a wholesale end at 6 cents, that's a pretty good rate.
And some of the proposals from these larger companies are, for instance, to allow us to utilize their solar panels if we will give them the extra electricity for X amount of time. So they are willing to work with us to try and get this program started, and costs will come down as we start using it.
Well, and realistically, I mean, 10 years ago, I mean, absolutely solar was out of reach for most, both the utilities, the commercial businesses, as well as residential. If you had the money, then you could do that. But what you're seeing right now is some of the technological and the economic forces coming in with Great Bay Distributors, the largest Anheuser-Busch distributor, putting solar panels on their new building in St. Petersburg. Lockheed Martin putting solar panels over the parking lot at its facility in Oldsmar. You're seeing all of the VA locations in the Tampa Bay area, 2 megawatt solar arrays. So somebody is seeing that something's working.
Well, I tell you who sees that, too, is Duke Energy. And when they see that solar panel, that's 2 megawatts or kilowatts that they're not selling themselves. So, when I see these programs over the years from the various utilities encouraging solar use and saving energy, it seems a little disingenuous in a way because that's how they make their money, selling electricity to you.
And the argument that the utilities are making is that if you get all of these folks who can afford to put solar on their rooftops, businesses and homeowners, then it's going to leave the people who can at least afford to do it on the grid and cause them to have to pay more to maintain power lines.
So it drives up costs for those who can't.
That's the argument. Now, of course, the other side argues that, well, but then you don't have to build as many power plants. And power plants affect the poor and the low income even more because everybody's charged the same across the board, so then it becomes a regressive charge, and so you have both sides in this tug of war over what is exactly the best way to do it. I mean, just as you were mentioning in terms of deregulation, I mean, there's this huge tug of war from both sides, and at some point, someone's got to take a look and say, hey, this is the state of Florida. We've got all these higher education institutions with great minds. Why can't anybody figure it out?
I read this article. It was a blog by a guy named David L. Roberts. He does PR for a renewable energy startup, so you kind of know where he's coming from here. But he claims that solar and other distributed renewable energy will lay waste to U.S. power utilities. You know, if you generate your own power, you buy less from them. So are power companies really worried, as he's suggesting about these solar panels on your roof? I mean, could that actually happen?
Well, Elon Musk, of course, we know him from Tesla, but he also is the chairman of the board for SolarCity, and he announced that they have a design for a battery for home batteries for solar that they expect to release in the next month or so, and within the next 6 months to actually have one produced. So now, if you're talking about solar panels dropping to these historic lows and a battery available where people could literally come off the grid, then, that poses a real challenge for the utilities. I mean, because now if you really get tired of the utility, then you can completely come off the grid.
And the technology will continue to become better and better. And yes, this is going to be a possibility. Just like everything else, I always laugh at the Jetsons. Not that most people listening to the show probably know what the Jetsons are. But if we look back, most of those items are now technologies that we use. So it is going to be possible for people to produce their own electricity.
Well, finally, a question for both of you. I know things like fuel and power production vary around the country, and that can affect prices. But compared to other states, are Florida consumers really getting ripped off? Ivan Penn, you go first.
Well, when you look at, especially Florida Power and Light, they do have a legitimate case where, their rates are the lowest among the investor-owned utilities in Florida. They have about 60% of the customers in Florida. So those rates are they are very, very low. Now, you have to also consider the housing stock in Florida. So even though your rate might be low, how efficient is your home? How efficient are the appliances and the usage of energy in your home? That's going to affect everything too. So your rate might be low, but you may be burning a lot of electricity. So there needs to be a comprehensive look at the state and its energy policy, which energy policy itself is lacking here. And that's probably the most difficult piece for the customer, as opposed to what exactly they're getting or not getting from their utility.
And Amanda Murphy?
And well, I was going to say, Mr. Penn has been contacted by a lot of constituents and just discussing their bills from month to month, which I found absolutely fascinating how it can change, even though they feel that there isn't a lot of increase in the usage. So whether it is expensive versus the rest of the country or not, the perception of our people that are living here in Florida who have been here and been paying this bill all along, they have felt the squeeze, and it is a lot higher than it has been over the past 10 years, I would say. And the retirees feel that their dollar is being stretched more and more and more, and that's really where you have to look and say, okay, how is this happening and how can we help relieve some of the stress on the end user?
Our listeners will be watching what you guys are doing in Tallahassee this spring, during the legislative session, begins March 3rd. And we thank you so much for being here, Newport Richey State Representative Amanda Murphy and Ivan Penn of the Tampa Bay Times. Great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was great here this morning.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for today's show. Sort of Matters is produced by Lottie Watts, engineered by Craig George, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Kirsten Cooper. Thanks for listening.